You are listening to Latin Waves, a weekly syndicated program. For more information about our program, visit www.latinwavesmedia.com.
We're privileged this morning to have Yves Zengler. He is my guest. He will be speaking to us about the current situation in Haiti and his latest book, Canada and Israel Building Apartheid. Thank you for joining us, Yves.
Thanks for having me.
Now, for many people, the immediate reaction when we hear of a natural disaster is to help. And the idea that countries all over the world are sending aid to Haiti, and most Canadians believe our countries act, you know, as honest brokers and, you know, we're doing the right thing. So let's talk a little bit about what is happening in Haiti. The first news report we get is that the airport has been secured by military forces. So can we talk about the militarization of aid?
First thing the Americans did was to seize control of the Toussaint Louverture airport in Port-au-Prince. And they finally got a Haitian okay on Friday for taking the airport, but they took it and then they basically forced Haitian government to give them the okay. And we have a massive increase in foreign troops, including 2,000 Canadian troops, somewhere between 12 and 20,000 American troops, 3,000 more UN troops, to the point where Haiti is going to have around 30,000 or more foreign troops in the country. There was already 10,000 UN troops prior to the earthquake. And there's going to be many more foreign troops in Haiti per square kilometer than there are in Afghanistan or Iraq. In fact, in the case of Afghanistan, it would work out to over 600,000 troops in a country the size of Afghanistan, the number of troops that will be in Haiti. Yet, as far as I can tell, Haiti, there's no war going on in Haiti. There was an earthquake and there's a disaster of quite massive proportions. And the militarization of aid is not just a sort of a problem on an abstract level, but the American government and has prioritized in the particularly in the first few days of the relief effort, prioritized military flights over humanitarian medical flights, including turning away five flights from Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, that were full of medical supplies, prompting even the French government to accuse the Americans of occupying Haiti. They also turned away flights from the Caribbean community, and certainly flights from Cuba or Venezuela were not being accepted. And I think there's almost no doubt that prioritization on military over humanitarian and medical goods led to many people dying unnecessarily.
One of the very shocking news reports I heard was precisely that the medicines in Doctors Without Borders were turned away. A French plane that was carrying a field hospital was also turned away. And so the question is, why? Why would this, would medical supply be turned away? Why would doctors be turned away? Why would the aid be prevented from entering the country?
Well, the justification the Americans gave was that there was instability. There was looting. There was violence, even. What I hear from people on the ground is that massive, massive exaggeration. It's part of a longer history of American planners, Canadian planners, demonizing the Haitian, poor black Haitians as violent, dangerous, and that they see Haiti, they see the problem immediately from a lens of security, rather than seeing it from a lens of humanity or devastation. So similar to what happened in New Orleans with Katrina, the victims of the earthquake became viewed as sort of almost like enemy combatants. That's how they justify increasing the military presence. I think that there's also probably a geostrategic objective. The Americans liked to export or take out their presence in the region. So this has given them an opportunity to expand their military stranglehold in the region. But a combination of a sort of geostrategic reasons and this sort of view of these poor blacks as violent.
I find interesting that in poor countries, the level of non-government organizations seem to be prevalent. And in the case of Haiti, you have written on it and describe it as a sort of an NGO laboratory. Haiti is a very vulnerable society where NGOs have a great deal of influence. Why is this important? Why should this matter to us?
Yeah, well, Haiti, I think, is the has the highest per capita number of NGOs anywhere in the world. So it's really the, from the NGO standpoint, it should be the success story. It's the emblem of their dominance. And so in Haiti, they have way more power. They run more than 80% of social services. So everything from school to healthcare. They are major players in Haitian society. But they've been used quite consciously, not so-called non-governmental organizations, groups here in Canada, based, like groups like Oxfam Quebec, Development and Peace, Alternatives, and others here in Quebec, have been used by the Canadian government to undermine Haitian governments, to destabilize Haitian governments that Ottawa was not, Washington were not particularly content with. In 2005, the Canadian International Development Agency report said, quote, supporting non-governmental actors contributed to the creation of parallel systems of service delivery. In Haiti's case, these actors, non-governmental organizations, were used as a way to circumvent the frustration of working with the Aristide government. This contributed to the establishment of parallel systems of service delivery, eroding legitimacy, capacity, and will of the state to deliver key services. That's coming from the Canadian International Development Agency, basically admitting that their policy of working through non-governmental organizations instead of working through Haitian ministries, Haitian governmental institutions, worked to undermine the Haitian government. Now, the people at CETA saying this are not admitting in this report, not admitting the bigger political objective, and the bigger political objective is quite clearly to undermine the Aristide government, which was not seen as supportive of Western interests in the country, through non-government organizations. So channeling what aid money Canada was putting into Haiti through NGOs instead of channeling it through the Haitian government, and that built up this whole parallel system of non-governmental organizations that participated in many ways in the destabilization campaign, politically speaking, basically justifying the February 2004 coup, but also, moreover, just weakening the whole Haitian state, the whole Haitian governmental capacity. And we see in this time of this horrible disaster that the NGOs are a complete failure. They're not able to properly coordinate the relief efforts. And what you would really need to properly coordinate relief efforts is a governmental apparatus, indigenous institutions that could mobilize the population. And in this case, the NGOs, which are really probably nowhere else in the world where they're as powerful as they are in Haiti, have been quite incapable of responding to this terrible human tragedy.
In many ways, you can see why it would be important to have an organization that's representative of the population, in which case would be an elected government. And when you talk about the frustration of working with the government of Aristide, a president that was ousted by military force, goes a long way to explain. Now, you wrote a book, Haiti Waging War on the Poor Majority. The recent earthquake is a catastrophe that has come to exacerbate what was already a country suffering from imposed policies by IMF loans and imposed... can you talk about these things that were already crippling the country and that and how it sort of has contributed to the misery they face now?
Haiti has, I think, by a long shot, been the worst victim of neo-imperialism in the world. So while Haiti won its independence very early on, the second country in the hemisphere after the U.S. in 1804, immediately Haiti was forced to pay a debt of restitution to France that took 122 years to pay off. That was a debt for France's lost property, which included the Haitians themselves, the slaves. Haiti was occupied by the U.S. Longer than any other country in the Americas, from 1915 to 1934. The Duvalier dictatorships from 57 to 86. Baby Doc, Jean-Claude, the son, heavily supported by Washington and Ottawa. François Duvalier, father, at different points was supported by Washington, certainly supported by the Haitian military, which was created by the Americans during their occupation of 1915 to 1934. And in some ways, the father, Duvalier, was a response to the racism of the U.S. occupation. So Haiti is a country that's been, you know, has a long history of being interfered with by outside powers. Over the past couple decades, there has been moves towards democracy, clear moves towards democracy among the poor majority, repeated elections where the same political faction, those associated with Jean-Bertrand Aristide and the Lavalas movement, the Famille Lavalas political party, have won basically everything, to be blocked by a combination of the Haitian military in the case of 1991 with tacit support from Washington, to the 2004 coup where there was a, you know, actual physical kidnapping by U.S. Marines of the elected president. So there's been a long history of outside intervention, political intervention. Additionally, a couple explanations for the horror of this earthquake was that the agricultural sector in the country has been decimated over the past 25 years, and that's intimately tied to policies that USAID, the Canadian International Development Agency, and the International Monetary Fund have pursued in terms of reducing tariffs on rice. For instance, now 30 years ago, Haiti produced basically all of its rice. Now it imports almost all of its rice from the U.S., major market, the biggest market per capita of U.S. rice anywhere in the world, and that's directly tied to the IMF imposing reductions in tariffs. And so what that's done, other examples, in 1983, the U.S. Pushed with Canadian aid money and going along with it, pushed getting rid of all the Creole pigs in the country, so wiped out all the pigs in the countryside because there was supposedly a disease, and that devastated the countryside. So people have been moving in to Port-au-Prince, have been fleeing the countryside and moving into a city that is not capable of handling what's between 2 and 3 million people. It was a city built for a couple hundred thousand, and that's why you see all these houses in the ravines going up the hill. And these were the poorly made houses, no inspection, no building codes, and they all came down. So those policies of undermining the Haitian agricultural sector, defunding Haitian agriculture, and that's tied into a larger vision of Haiti as a zone of cheap labor. So what international capital, what Haiti's global comparative advantage, according to capitalist economics, is as a hub of sweatshop labor, cheap, plentiful labor supply to produce T-shirts for companies like Montreal-based Guild and Activewear. So that's been very conscious policies of undermining the agricultural sector, which the other side of that, a view of Haiti as a hub of cheap labor, and that's led to tons of people, huge numbers of people in Port-au-Prince, and I think that has a directly tied to the extent of the death toll in this recent earthquake.
So what can Canada do? What can Canada do to help Haiti?
Well, I've put together a list of 10 things that Canada could do to help Haiti, which people can read on the Toronto Now or on the Media Co-op website in a slightly different version. One, right away, was focus relief efforts on the poorest neighborhoods. Number two, stop deporting Haitians from Canada. Fund a Haitian government disaster relief ministry to pay Haitians to clear the rubble. Four, provide the Haitian government with money and expertise to strengthen building codes and government inspection so that this, there's no future disasters. Five, provide funding for the Haitian government to set up a housing ministry that would help rebuild destroyed neighborhoods and make the expertise, the architects, make it Haitians who do that. And if there aren't enough Haitian architects at the moment, which there probably are, if there aren't, then train them in Haiti. Keep all the expertise in Haiti, and go to supporting Haitian housing ministry. Six, provide the Haitian government with resources to create a forestry ministry. One of the major problems, the countryside is basically entirely deforested, down from 80% when the Spanish arrived 500 years ago to less than 2% today. And that has a devastating effect on the countryside's ability to produce produce. So support hiring Haitians to replant, reforest the country, push Canadian government, Canadian companies to pay three times the minimum wage, which is $3. So have Ottawa push Canadian companies that work active in Haiti to pay a huge $9 a day, and shift Canadian aid, the tens of millions of Canadian aid dollars over the past few years that have been going into building prisons and police, into infrastructure for the various levels of government, to build transport systems, electrical capacity, public health, water, and sewer systems. And the general principle is to know that the aid that goes to Haiti must empower Haitians and must be about, increasing Haitian empowerment, increasing Haitian control over the country, not about advancing our own interests. And finally, and I think this is a central point, is get out. Once this is done, get out and leave Haitians to run their own affairs, which for too long outside powers have interfered and intervened in Haitian affairs.
Well, the number one thing that I think needs to be addressed is the issue that aid should not be loans. They don't need any more debt. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that, because the increase in debt and just maintaining that debt has such a crippling effect on any country in the hemisphere.
Well, one of the things that we're demanding, the Canada-Haiti Action Network, is that all of Haiti's debt is immediately cancelled. There's been some steps already from the World Bank and the Paris Club to, it appears they might be cancelling the debt, so that's a good sign. And that future money that was put in through reconstruction doesn't further indebt Haiti. And I was alluding to earlier, Haiti has a long history. Much of Haiti's debt today was accrued by the Duvalier dictatorships. So 40%+ of the current debt of the government was accrued by these dictatorships. It really should be seen as odious debt that doesn't need to be repaid, because the Duvaliers obviously pocketed a lot of this money when they fled the country. So debt has played a real central role in understanding Haitian history, all the way going back to this debt of independence that I was mentioning, that was that France forced Haiti to pay in 1825 at the threat of invasion. The Haitian elite were prepared to pay it because they were being excluded from international markets. So debt is especially important explanatory factor in the history of Haiti. That in the late 1800s, early 1900s, French, German, American gunboats entered Haiti repeatedly, and usually the justification for intervening was that some German or American bank was not being repaid properly. So there's a long and terrible history of debt deciding or having way too much influence, foreign debt having way too much influence over Haitian affairs.
We know that governments only follow, and so the initiative to push our government to do the right thing really must come from the people. In the absence of government in Canada right now, with the prorogal parliament, what can people do? What can concerned citizens who want, their government to act in a way that is responsible and in line with our values as citizens?
People can join the Canada-Haiti Action Network. It's a pan-Canadian solidarity group. Haiti Solidarity BC, based in Vancouver, is one of the members. I'm here in Montreal, part of Haiti Action Montreal. So we've been a solidarity network that's been going on for almost 5 years now. Small little groups in pretty much every city across the country, major city. So there's a lot of work to be done in terms of educating, in terms of mobilizing people around issues of how Canada has been interfering in Haitian affairs. So I think that is the most important work to be done. The most important work is political work. And we see that with all this money, this generosity and solidarity that Canadians are feeling towards Haiti over the past 10 days since this terrible earthquake, I think I'm very nervous that the government officials are going to use that solidarity and generosity in ways that serve their own interests. I think that certainly there's big danger that a handful of Canadian and American corporations are going to benefit, be the primary beneficiaries of the so-called reconstruction process. there's, you know, this question of militarization of aid. There's a lot of work that needs to be done on exposing and explaining this issue of why troops are not what's needed, to, you know, be very weary of the, what the long-term agenda is regarding the troops. But I think really the core work that needs to be done is political work here in Canada, to explain to Canadians, to build political power in this country, to be able to counter the most destructive policies chosen by Ottawa. And for people who want to get involved in the Canada-Haiti Action Network, people can go to CanadaHaitiAction.ca. Also, for people who want to donate money to groups that are providing essential relief efforts and essential medical efforts on the ground, there are some groups that are on the website of CanadaHaitiAction.ca, which are groups that tend to work closer with the population and are less self-serving, if you like, including groups like Partners in Health, the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund, that people can get more information on the website.
Thank you so much for being with us. My guest is Eve Engler. He is the author of Canada in Haiti, Waging War on the Poor Majority, the Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policy, and his latest book, Canada and Israel, Building Apartheid. How can people access your books?
People can go to the website of Turning the Tide, which is Left Wing Bookstore in Saskatoon. So turning.ca, turning.ca.
Thank you again for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Take care.
After I was born, I went home to watch my TV. Everyone was nice and the smiles were so sparkly. I watched what made them happy and I watched what made them cry. I learned about toys and candy my mommy should buy. And the TV God watches over me, opens up my eyes, shows me how to see all around the world every night and day on my TV. Teaches how to love, teaches what is real, tells what life is of, tells me how to feel. All I need to know I can find and see on my TV. I was a teenager and I knew just how to dress. I learned to use deodorant so I would always smell my best. I got myself a part-time job to buy the things I needed to have. And the payments on my supercharged Camaro really aren't so bad. And the TV God watches over me, opens up my eyes, shows me how to see all around the world every night and day on my TV. Teaches how to love, teaches what is real, tells what life is of, tells me how to feel. All I need to know I can find and see on my TV.
Everybody be careful, everybody be very careful, keep watching your TV. There are people who are laughing when they wink or a nod. There are people who are questioning our great TV God. Everybody be careful, everybody be very careful, stay tuned to your TV. There are ponies who are talking, there are wasters who read. There are people here who do not even own a TV. Everybody be careful, oh everybody be careful, oh everybody be careful.
Everything I know about my country, I learned on TV. The man on the screen tells me who is our enemy. They say that we are free and we must fight to be number one. So when the army calls, I'll grab my TV, my car and my gun. And the TV God watches over me, opens up my eyes, shows me how to see all around the world every night and day on my TV. Teaches how to love, teaches what is real, tells what life is of, tells me how to feel. All I need to know I can find and see on my TV.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.